Exodus chapter 23, verse 2 provides the law for our sermon this morning. It reads, "You shall not follow a crowd to do evil." Matthew chapter 18, verse 20 provides the gospel for our sermon, and it reads, "Where two or three are gathered together in my name, there am I in the midst of them." Those are the texts. Something that has often mystified me is why the spiritual denominator of a group is so often lower than the spiritual denominator of any person belonging to that group. Collective evil is always greater than the sum of its individual parts. Put simply, a person often behaves worse in a crowd than by himself. So often I've noticed that where two or three are gathered together, there is Satan in the midst of them. A ghastly perversion of the Matthew text I read a moment ago. Let me give you two examples of what I mean. The first could be a congregational voters meeting. Something strange happens to people in this situation. From the moment the meeting is called to order, many of the participants are transformed, hideously transformed. A sort of collective cruelty takes over. People, nice people, people you know to be nice people, people who were nice to you at the church door just last Sunday, these very people make the unkindest cuts and voice the darkest suspicions when they have the floor. And even when they don't have the floor. Retiring people become aggressive, quiet people become outspoken, humble people become arrogant. There are grumblings and mutterings and sputterings. Even the tone of their voice and the lines of their face become hard. They appear to be possessed, possessed in the demonic sense of the term. A pastor may leave such a meeting with a bitter taste in his mouth and with his faith in the efficacy of the gospel a bit shaken. The second example happened at a social gathering many years ago and outside this community. In the course of the evening, someone posed the hypothetical question for the group's entertainment. I forget the details, something about a beautiful girl stranded on an island receiving four or five different propositions, and I use that word advisedly, four or five different propositions from as many men offering to rescue her. Anyhow, we were to judge which proposition was the most moral, the most ethical. None of us labeled as moral, the most obviously moral proposal. Maybe because that proposal looked too simple, too easy to be the right answer. There must be a catch to it somewhere. But the truth, I fear, was the emergence of that mysterious group denominator. None of us dared to be as moral collectively as each of us would have been privately. Practitioners of old-fashioned morality in their homes were reluctant to admit to old-fashioned morality in a social setting, for fear, I suppose, of being considered old-fashioned. After all, this is the 21st century. As I left that evening, I wondered whether I had been flirting with damnation between sips of my coffee. In Tolstoy's War and Peace, the protagonist, Pierre, gives a moving description of some executions he had witnessed. A number of prisoners had been shot to death by a military firing squad. A squad composed of soldiers, some of whom Pierre knew to be humane, kindly people, almost nauseated at the prospect of killing. Yet Pierre noticed that once these soldiers became part of a group, a firing squad, they became machines. Some outside force seemed to take over, dehumanizing them until the bloody business was done. Pierre even learned to recognize the signs of the advent of this collective cruelty. Here it is again, Pierre said to himself, and I'm quoting Tolstoy now, and an involuntary shudder ran down his back. In the changed face of the corporal, in the sound of his voice, in the deafening din of the drums, Pierre recognized that mysterious, unsympathetic force which drove men against their will to do their fellow creatures to death. Or think of Peter, this disciple who on a one-to-one basis had assured Jesus that he would never deny or forsake the master, suddenly finds himself in a group of court employees warming their hands at a fire that seems symbolic of the force that took over in that hour. And Peter casually denies that he ever had any acquaintance with Jesus. Between hand rubs, even Peter flirted with damnation. Or take a contemporary instance. Would any of those three lads who recently murdered an Australian jogger out of boredom have committed that crime all by himself? What this mysterious force is that often makes the spiritual denominator of a group lower than the spiritual denominator of any of the individuals composing that group, I don't know. Call it Satan, is my suggestion. He's still a reasonable hypothesis, 21st century notwithstanding. At any rate, our Exodus text this morning seems to address this mysterious phenomenon when it says, you shall not follow a crowd to do evil. That's entirely law, of course, and we won't succeed in obeying this command by simply avoiding crowds or isolating ourselves from groups. After all, as Peter himself was reminded, it is also possible in group situations to, quote, strengthen the brethren. What makes that possible is the gospel supplied by our Matthew text this morning, Jesus' own words, where two or three are gathered together in my name, there am I in the midst of them. Ironically, this text seems to suggest a group solution for a group problem. Not really. The solution doesn't lie in the group, in the two or three. The solution lies in that person in the midst of the group, in the midst of the two or three. Nor does the solution consist in merely being gathered together. The solution rather consists in our being gathered together in his name. Jesus' name is biblical shorthand for who Jesus is and what Jesus has done. The solution, we call it the gospel, the solution lies in the person and work of Jesus, everything that he did from his conception to his ascension. And the group, the two or three, are merely the transmitters of that solution, that gospel. Any association of Christians, therefore, so long as it is an association in Jesus' name, packs a wallop that can fell the old evil foe. That association could be on the 10th tee of a golf course, or that association could be in this chapel on any given day of the week. Christians met together for corporate worship, among other things, can solve the corporate problem that we have discussed this morning. Now, isn't that something? We've drifted into a sneaky plug for regular chapel and church attendance. We rise for prayer.